One week to go until Election Day, and if you're feeling stressed, well, you're not alone. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, Halloween may be over, but people are still feeling spooked. Are you arguing with your friends, your family, on social media about the election? Election stress disorder and how to avoid it, that's coming up. Get on the line now at 549-2937. We are also streaming this conversation live on Facebook. Watch the show on Facebook and send us your questions there, too. Then later, Florida Times Union columnist Mark Woods on his just-completed walk across all of Jacksonville. Local band Canary in the Coal Mine with a live and studio performance ahead of this weekend's Porch Fest in Springfield. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Election Day is just 1 week away, and most Americans say they cannot wait for it to be over with. Recently, the American Psychological Association conducted a survey and found more than 50% of the country is stressed out by the upcoming election. They've lost friends, relationships over it. What's going on here? Well, with their thoughts right now, we welcome Whitney George and Jason Orrick, both assistant professors of mental health counseling at Jacksonville University. Good to see you both.
Hi.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And to our callers, are you stressed out by the election? Have you lost friendships or had arguments over it? We want your calls at 549-2937. Send your tweets as well and emails. And we're streaming this conversation live on Facebook. Watch the video on Facebook. You can also post your comments and questions there. We'll get to those in just a few minutes. So, Whitney George, let's begin with you. This new study finds that a majority of Americans are reporting stress over the election. Stress about revelations involving both major candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Stress about the tension that they're experiencing when it comes to discussing this election with people they disagree with, particularly friends and colleagues and loved ones. This just seems like an especially tense election for the country, correct?
Yeah, it really does seem like this election cycle has been a lot different from the ones we've experienced in the past, just in terms of how people are experiencing stress and the conversations that are surrounding that.
Yeah. And Jason Orrick, when people report they're stressed, what kinds of stories are they telling? What are they saying to researchers?
Well, I think what we're seeing, you know, looking at social media, those places is their sort of their values and belief systems and how socially charged they are right now. And how, you know, based on either candidate operating from that sort of fear platform, based on that belief system, the convictions that they have and that they share and that we've been monitoring on Facebook, in the classroom, even on JU's campus.
And when you talk about fear, you're hearing from partisans on both sides this incredible fear that if their candidate loses, that all is lost.
That is correct, yes. And that creates, you know, we're seeing this manifest of stress with these with people on Facebook and, you know, in the greater community, and how you know, that's starting to play out in many of their systems and affecting their daily lives in and out.
How so? What are some of the ways it's affecting people's daily lives? Whitney George.
I feel like people's daily lives are affected because this constant disruption and their ability to function throughout the day. They're being disrupted in that they can't get on social media without seeing just a barrage of comments. People are emotionally charged. Commercials, Saturday Night Live skits, you know.
My only relief, quite frankly, because it's so funny. But that's
it's
adding
everywhere.
To it, too.
Right.
It's everywhere, and the incredible polarization in this country is contributing to this stark divide. What advice do you have for even patients that you see in dealing with that? Now, say you have a good friend, even a spouse, you don't agree with, that can lead to some tension.
Sure. And I think what the American Psychological Association has recommended is really to just get the information that you need and then disconnect from all of the media outlets. So make sure you're informed, but then don't go overboard in participating in conversations and heated debates and social media messaging on the topic.
We're taking your calls about election stress in just a moment at 549-2937. Also, send us your emails and tweets and weigh in on our Facebook live stream as you can watch our professors live in studio online. And let me ask you, the American Psychological Association talks about how this election is lighting up different parts of the brain. The more primitive part of the brain, the amygdala, the hypothalamus, that is the part that's more focused on safety and security. Of course, those issues have been front and center during this contest. Other parts of the brain, the hippocampus, the frontal cortex, they are the more socially sensitive, thoughtful parts of the brain. When psychologists look at how politics lights up these different sections of our brain, how do you see that affecting the stress level people are experiencing this season because different voters are animated by different issues?
One thing that we're seeing is when stress, when an individual experiences stress, oftentimes the emotions become so fully charged that they go back to these physiological responses and sort of ignite that primitive part of the brain. So what they experience is higher levels of cortisol. I get so passionate about my stance, my values, my beliefs, that oftentimes I cast out the other person's opinion and view. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've been talking about is that, you know, in order to have true dialogue, you have to have a certain level of humility. And I think that's one of the things that we've really forgotten about in this presidential election.
Trying to have respect for another's point of view.
Correct. Yeah. And you see that with the candidates. You see, and then it sort of trickles down from that macro system into these more, you know, community systems, micro systems within the individuals and the communities and lives and families in which they live in.
Have you lost a friend over the election? Have you had arguments with loved ones, coworkers over this election? A new study finds the majority of Americans say they are very stressed about the election with 1 week to go. As you listen on the radio and you watch the conversation live on our Facebook feed, we want your calls right now, and we'll get to your social media comments in just a moment. It's 549-2937 to join us. Emily is in Jacksonville. Hi, Emily. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. How about you?
I'm very stressed, actually.
Yeah, why are you stressed?
So my degree is in political science. I've always been a political nerd. I remember the first election that I followed closely and stayed up all night to watch the results was Bush, Clinton in 92, and I was 7 years old. So I've always followed politics closely. And I've never been this emotionally affected by an election. I've never felt anxiety and stress and fear like I have, because I don't think there's ever been a candidate personally that I've feared like Donald Trump before. And I have personally lost a friendship, a good friend of mine that I've known since college. He basically cut ties with me over my support for, I support Hillary Clinton because he didn't understand why I was so emotionally invested in the election. He believed that I should have been more pragmatic in the way that I was assessing the election. And he was upset at me. He felt that I was too fearful. And he thought that that was just not something that intellectual people should be doing in this election. And we couldn't come to any kind of conclusion. And all of our years of friendship, this was something that we'd never reached an impasse like this before.
I'm sorry to hear that, Emily. Thanks for sharing that, though. All right. So that's not uncommon, is it, this year?
No, I feel like it's not uncommon that people are feeling very passionate. And in fact, you know, Michelle Obama even said that she has been shaken to her core in a way that she could not have predicted. And so I don't feel like people are alone in the amount of stress that they're feeling and just how deeply this some of these issues are affecting them.
Mm-hmm. We're already getting lots of comments on Facebook. You can watch the video stream in studio right now online. Laura comments, my stress comes from watching the biased media. Most of the people I know are also stressed about journalists colluding with politicians and political parties. It feels like a government-controlled message. And that may be a reference to revelations that are coming out via WikiLeaks, emails between party operatives and media outlets. Here's a comment from Carol. I can't vote for either candidate this election. I'm amazed at how confident many voters feel about their personal choice for president. I'm voting third party. And we're going to go to your calls. Let's go to Jason now in Jacksonville. Hi, Jason. Good morning. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you for taking my call. Just have a quick comment. I've had many discussions and really appreciate the dialogue that you're having here on the show. I think one of the things we've really lost is that democracy means that we have different opinions and different ideals. And if we lose our ability to connect with each other and to actually have passionate, heated discussions and still honor and still respect the person and still value their point of view. You know, I can tell you as a small business owner, the way that the healthcare laws have affected me and my ability to not grow my business, you know, it leads to some heated discussions. But I will tell you this morning, I got up, I took a shower, I went and voted, and I felt so dirty, I had to go home and take another shower.
I'll leave you guys with that.
Thanks so much.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So is some of this stress due to the fact that, as Jason pointed out, voters are not many voters, not all, but many voters do not like the choices at the top of the two main tickets?
I think that has a lot to play into it to a certain extent. I think also how polarized both candidates are in this current election. I think also there's that fear. I mean, I keep coming back to that theme, but fear seems to be driving this force. And oftentimes when fear relates to stress, and then we have a tendency to, if we're not and able to manage our triggers that create that stress, you know, we can overreact in certain situations. And to point out one other piece to the first caller is, you know, learning how to be in control of the things, you know, controlling the things we have power over. And really, in this election, that's just our vote. And we have to have faith in our government, regardless of which candidate that is elected, is that, you know, hopefully things will, you know, go back to somewhat of a status quo. And that's the one thing I'm hopeful for, you know, in that after we get through November 8th, that our country may not be happy with the candidate that's chosen based on party affiliation, but hopefully our government will do their due diligence to make our country, you know, run and operate well.
A new study finds the majority of Americans report they are extremely stressed out by the presidential election. It's 1 week away. And as we speak about this with Jason Orach and Whitney George, both assistant professors of mental health counseling at JU, and we stream the conversation live on Facebook, we are taking your calls right now. It's 549-2937. Art is in Fernandina Beach. Hi, Art. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning to you, and thank you for your show and everything you do for Jacksonville. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I think that, well, I mean, one thing that strikes me is that there people will select a candidate typically, you know, because of a philosophy, or they pick a candidate because of party loyalty. But in this case, I think people, having done that, are now suffering guilt, or they're having a difficult time finding the positives within their own candidate to defend. And so as they struggle with that, when they get into a discussion with someone else, they just get, not only are they getting angry with the other person because of their point of view, but they're getting angry with themselves, not being able to settle on enough good and positive issues to present in their argument, and so they just drop into the negative all the time, and that certainly is not good for any of us. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Art. Whitney George.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that when we can't be confident in our own responses and in our own answers, it makes it hard for us to feel good about the choices that we're making.
I've witnessed these debates right here on this program between, say, a Donald Trump and a Hillary Clinton supporter, that the Trump supporter will point to controversies with Secretary Clinton, including the recent matters of her emails that has come up again this week. The Clinton supporters will point to the controversies that have dogged Donald Trump's campaign, not releasing his tax returns, allegations of sexual assault, and many other things. And so it really does seem as though partisan voters are deeply invested in the narrative of the other candidate, the negative narrative of the other candidate.
Well, and I think what's so important to remember is that on a national level, that we need to get back to a place of civility and kindness and compassion and stop focusing on what everyone else is doing wrong, because certainly there's things that we can point to in each candidate that may not be ideal.
Mm-hmm. Rachel tweets the show, "Here's what I find most stressful, the dramatic news coverage of every new development and the ugly campaign ads." Janice is on the South Side. Hi, Janice. Good morning. You're on the air.
Melissa, how are you?
Good.
I want to say that I was jotting something down that I didn't know when you would take the call. I found out just before you had your Women, Words, and Wisdom forum that you had over in Riverside.
Yeah.
And that was exhilarating.
Thanks. And, yeah, I loved it too.
It was outstanding. I had on my one that I saw that Chelsea had, "Hillary Clinton is a badass," which is a compliment. And I had on my Hillary hat, and I was running around doing errands, and I came on. I didn't know how dressed up they would be. And everybody was just, they were kind of thrilled over that T-shirt, the hat, and everything. And your whole...
Oh, I didn't have any partisan gear on or talk about politics, but...
No, I know. But I did.
Oh, I
did.
See. Okay.
I had on my Hillary is a badass that Chelsea had on, and I had on my hat to make sure they understood Hillary Clinton 2016. Everybody was wonderful to me. They just got such a kick out of it. Your whole presentation was so inspiring, and that's the kind of thing I have been looking for that helps me not get stressed out. I've looked for inspiring ways to connect with people, even people that did not share my opinion. I haven't gotten into, for one thing, I lost my mother a little over 2 years ago. We passionately shared this together, and we had the opportunity to meet Hillary, and Hillary reached out and just embraced my mother, and we got to talk to her for quite a long time. A storm was coming up, and everybody left, and so there we were. Everybody knows my neighborhood, my extended family, they are Republican. They've seen my signs up. As soon as she announced, I got the T-shirt and started running around town in them. I don't try to force my views on anybody, but I do a lot of listening. I find a lot of little common ground situations with people of opposing views. And it's just been, I just can't tell you how inspiring and unbelievable that this whole thing has been. Instead of sitting there just watching the news, I watch it some. I'm usually tired because I stay up late and I watch the late night comics, and then I watch a little bit, and then I go on over to headquarters and I start channeling my energy into that, and I get my feedback there, not just sitting there watching the news and getting stressed out over that. It's been an integral part of my grief recovery. It really has. And even though I'm not glad that it's so divisive, and I hope our country can do what I recently heard a commentator say, we've got to have reconciliation.
Yeah.
I use that word a lot when I'm talking to people.
Thanks, Janice. Yeah, I think, and thanks for sharing that story. I didn't get to meet you that night. There were so many people there, but I'm really glad you came out, and I'm really glad you called in. Thank you for that. Reconciliation.
Yes. And listening. I think one of the key things that I picked up on there from the caller was, you know, being able to listen to your friend, to your colleague, hear their point of view, though you may not agree with it. That's okay. You know, the other piece is that 24/7 media. I mean, being able to walk away from it, turning your notifications off on Facebook, that's probably a key point.
That's a good thing to do if you're feeling stressed. Denise in Putnam County. Hi, Denise. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Two nights ago, I broke up with he's just my boyfriend. We don't live together, but because I voted for Hillary and he voted for Trump.
Oh, yeah? And who initiated the breakup?
Well, all along, every time I put a Hillary sign out in front of my house, he's been trashing it and then laughing about it, thinking it's funny. And then one time in front of all of our friends, I think alcohol was involved at this point. He was grabbing me and laughing and saying he was Trump groping me. And I didn't think that was funny. And then two nights ago, because I went and voted early and I already got my Hillary vote in and he hasn't voted yet, and he started screaming at me that I was supposed to vote for Trump and stormed out like a five-year-old. I know five-year-olds that didn't act like that. And I had a friend here, and she said, I can't even believe he just said that to you. And there was no alcohol involved. He screamed at me. The veins were coming up out of his neck. His whole face turned red. I thought he was going to have a coronary.
Sorry to hear that. Yeah. And, you know, Denise, so many relationships are being strained by this election. I think your story is kind of a common one.
I haven't seen him for two nights, and I feel relieved. Relief. I have a relief not seeing him screaming at me about something Trump. Trump is a chump.
Well, hey, let's keep it civil here. I appreciate the call, though. That's Denise in Putnam County. But, okay, the intensity of what she said, as you are both pointing out, whether you're a Trump supporter or a Clinton supporter or a third-party supporter, the intensity is making relationships very difficult to navigate right now. Mm-hmm. And in particular, when it comes to some of these gender-related issues between couples.
Right. And I think that is one thing unique to this election cycle is some of the more gender-related issues that have been coming up for people. Also, sort of like Denise was saying, relationships getting deeply affected because of various political beliefs. And again, going back to keeping things civil, having compassion for one another more than compassion for a particular candidate.
Stevie in Murray Hill. Go ahead, Stevie. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey. I think I personally have had to block a family member from my social media. And we probably won't be spending Christmas or Thanksgiving together this year. And I think the reasoning is, we have very differing political opinions, and that's fine. But I tend to kind of hang back and not be super aggressive with my opinion. And we've had words before, you know, hey, it's fine for you to have a differing opinion. You know, you support Trump, I don't. But, you know, kind of keep it off my social media. But that's a boundary that hasn't been respected. And so, therefore, they've had to be sort of cut off. But I think for me, what's really shocking is I think maybe I had a Pollyanna-ish idea of how people felt about immigration or pro-choice, pro-life issues or the wage gap or things like that. And now this election has really brought up some of those really vehemently negative views, and it's shocking to me. And so I think things are being revealed to me about people that have been in my life, and maybe I'm having a hard time dealing with the fact that they are so different and so, to put hateful, honestly, kind of rude and awful about a lot of things. So, yeah, I'm having an emotional crisis over the election.
Stevie, sorry to hear that. Thanks for calling. What's your final advice for folks out there?
You know,
because a lot of families are going to have some tense Thanksgivings, I think it's fair to say.
Well, I think, again, it goes back to being in control of the things you have power over, and that's your power of thought, your ability to raise your own consciousness, your ability to make informed decisions on the candidate and be okay with that. But at the same time, I mean, going back to what I said early on in the show is, you know, dialogue cannot exist without humility. So that ability that though you may your family member may see things completely different than you. That ability to say, hey, you know, I see that you're passionate about, you know, these issues, these stances, this candidate, whatever it may be, and outside of the presidential election, but be able to say, you know, I can embrace your differences on this, you know, and it's okay sometimes, I think, you know, to take a break. I mean, sometimes we need a break from our family members, from our friends, to kind of step back and be reflective over what am I bringing to the table? What am I creating? How am I, you know, when I'm engaging with that other, am I engaging, you know, in creating conflict, or am I opening a place for dialogue that we can grow a collective consciousness, even if it comes down to we agree to disagree.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jason Orrick and Whitney George are both assistant professors of mental health counseling at JU. And later in the hour, we will hopefully relieve your stress as Canary in the Coal Mine performs live in studio. Keep listening for that. Also ahead, marking Epilepsy Awareness Month here on the First Coast. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Earth Pets. Since 1979, a local non-franchise pet supply store on San Jose Boulevard in Mandarin, researches and offers natural foods and treats, holistic supplements, eco-friendly toys, and experienced nutritional guidance. More at earthpetsflorida.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Donald Glover. He created the FX series Atlanta, in which he stars as a Princeton dropout who's broke and wants to manage the career of his cousin, who's a rapper. Glover wrote for 30 Rock, played Troy Barnes on the series Community, raps under the name Childish Gambino, was nominated for 2 Grammys, and also does stand-up. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Before you head to the polls, do you know what's on your ballot? Let WJCT's 2016 elections page be your guide. State amendments and local referenda, judges up for retention, interviews with candidates for local and state office. It's all there. Click the 2016 elections banner on WJCTnews.org and tune in to 89.9 on election night, November 8th, for live coverage of the return starting at 7.
Welcome back. Well, November is National Epilepsy Awareness Month, and it's estimated some 400,000 Floridians suffer from epilepsy. We're in luck, though, because the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida is leading the fight to overcome the challenges of living with epilepsy and accelerate therapy to stop seizures, find cures, and save lives. Dr. Syed Assad is a partnering neurologist with Epilepsy Foundation of Florida. David Grissette works with EFOF as their community relations director. And gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And as we begin November, we are talking about the fact that November is Epilepsy Awareness Month. Doctor, let's begin with you. Most people have a vague idea of what this condition is. Strictly define, what is epilepsy?
Well, I'll talk about seizures first. So seizures are excessive, abnormal neuronal activity or electrical activity in the brain. You can have seizures which are provoked. So, for example, if my sugar level drops to 30, my brain will be irritated and I'll have a seizure. That's not epilepsy. The treatment for that is I need to keep my sugar levels up so I don't have those events. Sometimes people have a tendency to have recurrent seizures. Sometimes these are unprovoked, or they're based on either a trauma to the brain or a genetic predisposition. And if you have recurrent unprovoked seizures, that's called epilepsy.
That's called epilepsy. David Grissett, how does the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida provide services and treat people, help people get treated?
Yes. First, we're very happy to be celebrating our 45th anniversary this year. But the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida provides programs, services, and support to the community. So clients can focus on improving their lives. We assist with medical services, case management, educational presentations, prevention, support groups, current epilepsy resources. We have a summer camp for children and more things. What's very significant for what we do is we're one of the few nonprofits that provides medical services. And for many people that are suffering with epilepsy, they're not able to drive because their seizures are not controlled. They may have multiple seizures a day. The seizures are not controlled, and they may take many medications, which causes cognitive impairment, so they're not able to work and obtain health insurance. So we, partnering with physicians like Dr. Assad, we are able to assist these people with medical services to be able to see a neurologist.
Right. And I did not realize this, but about 1 in 26 people, 4% of the population will have this diagnosis of epilepsy. There's also a condition called SUDEP, sudden unexplained death from epilepsy. I had no idea. This is why we're raising this awareness.
Absolutely.
Do we know what causes this?
We're not exactly sure. It's thought to be related to the seizures resulting in either cardiovascular or respiratory abnormalities. The only good thing I'm going to say is it's very, very rare, but that's exactly why it's important to raise awareness.
And where are we today in 2016 in terms of research and treatment? How far has the medical community come in diagnosing and treating patients with epilepsy?
We have some good tools to diagnose epilepsy. You know, when you have paroxysmal events, events that come and go, by the time they come to see the doctor, they may be completely fine. So there are ways to monitor their brain activity. There are ways to look for underlying causes. We don't always find an underlying cause, especially if it's a genetic or idiopathic epilepsy, but we try to. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of treatment, there are medications, but, you know, about 50% of patients respond to the initial medication. Subsequent medications, if a second medicine added on, you know, 11% more people will respond. A third medicine, 4%. So as you pile on more and more medications, unfortunately, there's side effects, and the efficacy goes down. So for those people, there are surgical options where you can either remove the part of the brain where the seizure is coming from, or you can even do vagal nerve stimulators.
So there's a lot happening. David Grissett, for more information, people need to contact EFOF, the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida.
That's correct. And we have a local number here, which is 731-3752. And the number at our main office, which is in Miami, is 877-553-7453. And that's also our number for intake for people inquiring to become new clients for the foundation.
November is National Epilepsy Awareness Month. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Syed Assad, partnering neurologist, and David Grissett, community relations, both with Epilepsy Foundation of Florida. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Much more still to come. Stay with us.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, FBI Director James Comey is facing widespread criticism for announcing an investigation into more of Hillary Clinton's emails just days before the presidential election. The latest on the investigation and the political firestorm it's created. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Beyond the stump speeches and the latest headlines,
everything she touches has turned
bad. Jane and I are running a campaign of issues, not insults.
Build the wall.
Equal pay for women's work.
NPR brings you...
The American people don't feel certain.
It is quite a struggle across the board.
I just don't think it's as easy to get by in the world today.
The voices of the country. Listen every day.
Morning Edition and All Things Considered every day on 89.9 WJCT.
From the Panhandle to the Peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard. Welcome back. Florida Times Union columnist Mark Woods has finished walking across Jacksonville, that is. Now, Woods decided to travel on foot all the way across Duval County from its northernmost tip all the way down to the St. Johns County line. And he found some interesting stuff along the way. He walked over here to the studio. Actually, I think he drove over to fill us in. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And of course, you've had quite a year, what with the publication of your book about the national parks. And as if that weren't enough, you also decided to undertake this project of walking across the county. Why did you decide to do that?
It's just something I've thought about for a few years that I thought would be fun, just because we have, you know, we're the, by land mass, the largest city in the lower 48, and we're consistently ranked as one of the least walkable cities. So you put those two together, massive city, not walkable.
Yeah.
Why not try walking across it?
So you started up at the Nassau County line. You'd walk a little every Monday and then drive back to wherever you stopped the week before and start again.
Right.
That's
how
you did it.
I started at Rennie's Redneck Yacht Club.
Nice.
Right there across US 17. And started early one morning in April, called into the show, actually. You had me call.
Yeah, you called in when you started. Yeah. At,
from the bridge
that
there.
That was in April? Wow, it's been a while.
And then finished and walked back to, yes, Rennie's, for instance, that morning. And it was, so it was mid-morning on a Monday, but it was already, there were already some patrons in there having a Monday morning beer. So that was the start of, you know, I had quirky stuff like that kind of along the way, yes.
What else did you discover on your walks?
I found that even though I've driven most of these areas many times, there's something about walking it and just going at that pace and taking detours that I even places I had been before, I felt like I was kind of seeing them either in a completely new way or for the first time. And it was, I feel like I know my city a little bit better than I did 6 months ago.
Sure. And you wanted to also bring attention to the fact that it's not a very walkable city. So did you have any trouble when you were out walking?
I didn't have too much. There were once or twice where I had somebody kind of honk a horn and I'm, you know, crossing a walkway where I have the right of way. And I thought, no, you know, this is an example of our issues. But
yeah,
for the most part, no. But, you know, I wasn't purposely trying to go to the most dangerous intersections and I was walking at a time of day that was pretty safe. And, you know, so I don't think just because I had a mostly positive experience makes these studies wrong. I think we do have a lot of, bicycle and pedestrian issues in our city.
Now that you've experienced it firsthand, what do you think is the easiest or most important change the city should make to make this area more walkable?
Well, I mean, I think I wrote about it at one point. I do believe that's something government can do. I don't necessarily believe in health-wise government saying, you know, these sodas are too big or that. But I do believe government should, the infrastructure to make a healthy city. And, you know, whether it's trails or bike paths or sidewalks or those kind of things. And we're getting better about that in Jacksonville, but we still have a long way to go. So that's, I think there's a lot we can do to think in those terms whenever we're building new roads, whenever we're building new developments. You know, one of the biggest things we've done in the last decade is both of our river walks. In the time, you know, I moved here in 2001, and since then, our riverfront is dramatically more walkable and a much more pleasant experience. But we still have a long way to go there, and we have issues with, you know, you go on the North Bank and you come to chain link fences and blocked off parts of it.
Right.
So, you know, we still have a lot to do there.
Now, when you were out walking, people walked with you from time to time. What was that like?
That was fun. I mean,
you were like Rocky. Like, yeah, all the kids were like trailing along behind him.
Forrest Gump. Yeah.
Or Forrest Gump. Yeah.
That was fun. I liked it. I had some, you know, would be prearranged where I tried to meet somebody from a certain neighborhood, and there were some that just happened kind of organically. I mean, the first, there was this Annie B. Henry was a retired college professor, or this woman walking down Main Street on the north side was the first fellow pedestrian I saw, like, I think 4 weeks into the walk, who was not somebody who'd just come out to walk with me. And that was kind of fun walking with her and talking to her. But yeah, from, let's see, Cleve Warren, Lisa King at the Gator Lodge, my wife, Toni, walked with on our anniversary.
Oh, that's nice.
Gary Sass leads downtown walking tours. Rabbi Fish walking to a synagogue. One of my favorites was Goober, the 400-pound tortoise, walking with him a few yards at the zoo. Somebody I actually walk faster than.
Yeah. Oh, you have a leisurely gait, is that right? Because it says here you walked 129 miles.
Yeah.
That's a lot of walking.
But that's over. This was no athletic feat. I said that from the get-go. People could do this. You know, runners in town could do this in an afternoon, but get from one end of the town to the other. But I tried to take my time, and my coworkers accused me of milking this as long as possible, which is probably true.
You did get official approval to do this.
Yes.
So you would go every Monday for the like half a day?
I would. Yeah, I'd leave. I usually started pretty early because I didn't time this quite right, where a lot of it was in the summer. So I would try and start pretty early so that I would be done, you know, late morning or midday.
Yeah, you did do this in the hot part of the year. So what's next for Mark Woods? You've had this incredible success with your book, Lassoing the Sun. You've done the walking project. You have this beloved column in the paper. What's up your sleeve now?
I don't have anything.
Nothing.
On my sleeve. No, I have talked about, you know, I finished at Mandarin Park at St. John's County line, and I've talked about maybe paddleboarding from south back to north, so come up to St. John's.
Oh,
at least have the current with me, and that might be kind of fun. Or a lot of, you know, people did. I got a wonderful reader reaction to the walking thing, and people kept saying, "Are you going to go west to east next, or east to west?" So I don't think I'll do that right away, but I'm already thinking that would be kind of fun.
You should go east to west so the sun's not in your eyes.
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. I was thinking west.
I'm thinking logistically for you.
I was thinking west to east.
Oh, you want to do it that way.
So that I could finish at the beach. And
oh, that'd be nice.
Have a drink at the beach or something.
From Baldwin to the beaches.
Right.
It's Mark Woods. And follow, by the way, the hashtag Mark created is Mark Walks Jack. So when you do this again, people can follow along that way.
Yep.
All right. Well, always good to talk to you, and thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Keep listening, because in a moment, we've got a special treat, a live in studio performance from Jacksonville's own Canary in the Coal Mine.
Join WJCT and the Boy Scouts of America as they host a seminar on multigenerational wealth and philanthropic planning, Wednesday, November 2nd, 8 a.m. at WJCT Studios. This seminar is for financial planners, estate planning attorneys, and CPAs. Presentation by Tripp Gray from Jackson National. Continuing education credits are available. The seminar is free, but reservations are required. Info at wjct.org/events.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
When pianist Yefim Bronfman played this in Vienna, he had just gotten a bad cut on his finger. He insisted on doing the concert even though he was bleeding on the keys. Coming up, we'll hear Bronfman playing the same piece a week later. Bronfman, Bartok, and Bloody Fingers on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Porch Fest is coming up this weekend in historic Springfield. It's a one-of-a-kind community event that promotes community, historic districts, and live music. Porch Fest founder Christina Parrish is here with a preview, along with local favorites Canary in the Coal Mine. So excited, they're going to perform in just a moment. But first, Christina Parrish, Porch Fest has come around again this weekend, happening Saturday in Springfield. Lots of excitement.
Yes, Melissa, thanks for having us today. Porch Fest is going to be bigger and better this year. First of all, we have fabulous weather forecast for Saturday, something we really haven't had the past few years. We have about 10 more bands than we had year one and two. And of course, we're featuring Canary in the Coal Mine's final concert in the evening on our big Ritz Theater stage in Clutho Park.
Oh, very nice. Now, in a moment, we'll talk about Canary. But first, for people that have never been, Porch Fest is a celebration of Springfield's homes and streets. There are bands performing on porches. There are bands performing in the park. This is a really special event. How did you come up with this concept?
About almost 3 years ago now, a group of friends and I were sitting on my front porch talking about ways to bring people into Springfield. And one of those friends, who is from Buffalo, New York, had heard about a Porch Fest that was held there. Because Springfield has so many beautiful big porches, we thought it would be the perfect way to introduce people to our neighborhood.
I was lucky enough to go last year, and the streets are pretty much closed to traffic. So you can walk around the streets, check bands at different homes, mix and mingle. There's lots of food trucks. It's a festival atmosphere. And as you said, the park is a big part of it as well.
It is. The whole thing starts in the park. People should start at the corner of West 3rd and Silver Streets, where they can pick up a map that shows all of the band locations. FSCJ is donating parking for us this year, so you can park your car just two blocks south of the Porch Fest area at FSCJ's campus and walk over. Then we have about 25 bands on porches in the neighborhood from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. 20 or more food trucks in the park all day long, craft beer, and the evening concert from 6 to 9 o'clock.
Now, we've got a preview right now. Canary in the Coal Mine is going to perform at Porch Fest and also here in studio, and you said this is their final concert?
We are sad to report that it's their final concert. They were with us at the first Porch Fest and really helped us get things started, so we're honored to feature them at the third Porch Fest.
Here they are now, one of the featured bands at this Saturday's Porch Fest, Jacksonville's own Canary in the Coal Mine.
One, two, three, four.
Things licked her belly as she sings in the ground. The door will be fired at her, she'll build an unfeeling power.
She felt the Holy Spirit.
the Coal Mine. Go see them Saturday at Porch Fest in Springfield. Guys, that was beautiful. Thanks for being here. Diane Reams up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow, so make sure to listen. Enjoy the music Saturday at Porch Fest, and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.